What do these following foods have in common? Potatoes in Ireland, tomatoes in Italy, and chili peppers in China. I'll give you a couple seconds to think about it. Okay, so the foods I mentioned aren't actually from those countries. Potatoes, tomatoes, and peppers were actually first cultivated in the Americas. Now, you might be wondering, how did these foods from the New World travel to the Old World? Well, the exchange of food between these continents is part of the Columbian Exchange. Named after the explorer Christopher Columbus, the Columbian Exchange describes the exchange of plants, animals, culture, and technology between Europe, the Americas, and Africa. While the Columbian Exchange helped us become more interconnected as a global society, it came at a heavy price. You see, food and animals were not the only things exchanged between colonizers and the indigenous peoples. When Europeans traveled to the Americas, they brought with them many diseases. These included measles, yellow fever, and of course, smallpox. Unlike the previous episode, which was about the plague of Justinian, the outbreaks of disease instigated by the Columbian Exchange is not just one epidemic. Throughout the next few centuries, waves of disease would terrorize the indigenous populations and nearly wiped them out. Welcome to A History of Pandemics. I'm Megan, your host. Thank you so much for tuning in. On this podcast, we delve into some of history's most devastating epidemics and pandemics. On this episode, we will take a look into the Columbian Exchange, which is the first large-scale encounter between peoples of the Old World and New World. Deadly diseases were transmitted as a result of these interactions, which devastated the indigenous populations in the Americas. You can find all episodes of the podcast for free on Spotify or wherever else you listen to podcasts. To listen to A History of Pandemics, just click on the app and type in A History of Pandemics in the search bar. And now, back to the episode. Coming up, a brief rundown of American colonization. Beginning in the 15th century, European countries had one goal in mind: to find a convenient sea route to Asia. Traditionally, merchants would travel across the Silk Road, a trade route established across Europe and the Middle East to get to Asia. However, the time it took to travel across the Silk Road was long and arduous. It usually took years to even arrive in Asia, which meant goods were traded at a much slower rate than people wanted. In addition, there were many dangers along the Silk Road, including robbers, poisonous animals, and dreadful weather conditions. Thus, European explorers wanted to find a safer and faster route to Asia. This period of about 300 years became known as the Age of Exploration. At this time in history, Europe was going through the Renaissance, a period of enlightenment and new ideas. Absolute monarchy was also on the rise, replacing the old feudal system of the Middle Ages. With a king or queen holding complete control of their kingdom, the nation's wealth was concentrated in the hands of a few individuals, which made funding for exploration much more feasible. During the Age of Exploration, there was one nation that rose to become the dominant world power, Spain. But what factors contributed to the rise of Spain compared to other European nations? In the 1400s, Spain was ruled by Queen Isabella I of Castile and King Ferdinand II of Aragon. These two monarchs are now known as the Catholic monarchs because of their religious persecution towards all non-Catholics. Under their rule, the Spanish Reconquista was successfully completed, which was a period in which Catholic Spain was trying to reconquer the Iberian Peninsula from the Muslim Moors. The last Muslim stronghold, Granada, finally fell in 1492. The Spanish believed that their success was due to divine help from God, a driving force in their thirst for colonization. This attitude was not helped by the Spaniards' motto of conquer, convert, or become rich. These factors strongly fueled an interest in exploration in Spain. 1492 was a busy year for Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand. Besides reconquering Granada, which was a serious military effort, they also sponsored a middle-aged Genoese man to find a sea route to India. As many of you may know, this man was Christopher Columbus. However, what most are unfamiliar with is that the sponsorship of Spain was actually Columbus's last resort. In 1484, Columbus first proposed the idea of a voyage to India to King John II of Portugal. After two rejections, Columbus brought the idea to Genoa and Venice, but to no avail. Finally, after much deliberation, the Catholic monarchs agreed to sponsor Columbus as they hoped to gain many riches through the lucrative Asian spice trade. On October 12, 1492, one of Columbus's sailors saw land for the first time since the beginning of their 36-day voyage across the Atlantic. The Niña, Pinta, and Santa Maria soon landed on the island of Guanahani, which is part of the group of islands now known as the Bahamas. Columbus must have thought he did it. He found a shortcut to India. He was very wrong. He actually reached the Americas, and this is the event that launched the dreadful period of colonialism. In the decades after Columbus's first expedition to the Americas, Spain saw that the accidental discovery of the Americas made them wealthier than ever before. With the trading of gold, silver, newly discovered plants and animals, and technology firmly established, this economic cycle is now labeled the Columbian Exchange, named after Columbus. Seeing this success, Spain decided to fund more expeditions to the New World. Columbus only reached the coasts of the Caribbean, but Spain wanted more. They wanted to get onto the mainland. Enter two of Spain's most famous conquistadors, Hernan Cortes and Francisco Pizarro. Cortes and Pizarro are respectively known for helping Spain conquer the Aztecs in present-day Mexico and the Incan Empire in modern-day Peru and Ecuador. They are also infamous for being completely ruthless to their men and the indigenous populations they came in contact with. Cortes first landed in Mexico in 1519. Within 6 months, he and his men arrived in Tenochtitlan, the capital of the thriving Aztec Empire. The plan was simple: capture the Aztec Emperor Moctezuma II and take the land and gold for Spain. To the Spaniards' surprise, the process was even easier than anticipated. Moctezuma welcomed them with open arms and believed Cortes was the manifestation of the Aztec god Quetzalcoatl. Within 2 years, Moctezuma was killed and the Aztec Empire ceased to exist. Pizarro's experience in the Incan Empire was similar to that of Cortes's in Mexico. His primary goal was also to find gold in South America and he did. Native South Americans told Pizarro that the Incan Empire was rich with gold and silver mines. Legends called this territory Viru, which later became Peru. Pizarro's first expedition was in 1524, but it was a failure due to his conquistadors' lack of commitment as well as extreme hostility from the natives. Several expeditions followed, with much more success. In 1532, Cuzco, the capital of the Incan Empire, was conquered, and the Incan Emperor Atahualpa was garroted to death, even though a huge ransom of gold and silver were paid. By the mid-16th century, virtually all of South America was under Spanish control. One factor that contributed to the conquistadors' success was their advancement in technology compared to the natives of the Americas. The Spanish had guns and horses, while the Aztecs and Incas fought with spears and clubs on foot. That being said, only a small sliver of the casualties that the Aztecs and Incas faced were due to warfare and weaponry. In fact, it was the outbreak of deadly diseases, such as smallpox, that actually annihilated them. The Aztecs and Incas had no immunity to smallpox, since the disease did not exist in the Americas in pre-Columbian times. Within a few short years, smallpox wiped out between 60 to 90% of the Incan population, and around 15 million Aztecs succumbed to the disease as well. Smallpox, luckily, is not a concern for us nowadays, but this disease was so incredibly devastating for people of the past, with a whopping 71% mortality rate. So, what was smallpox, and why was it so deadly? Smallpox is a disease caused by the variola virus. There are two types of variola virus that cause smallpox: variola major, which is the most common, and variola minor, which only occurred in less than 1% of cases. Unlike many other diseases, smallpox has not been found to be transmitted by animals. Smallpox was incredibly contagious, however, and mostly spread from person to person through direct contact. Examples of direct contact are through cough droplets in the air, fluid in smallpox pustules, and smallpox scabs. Contaminated objects, such as clothing, may also act as a vector. According to the Center for Health Security, symptoms appear 12 to 14 days after infection. According to the Center for Disease Control, some common symptoms of smallpox include a high fever, body aches, and fatigue. Most importantly, though, smallpox victims are usually identified by the numerous sores and pustules on their face and body. These pustules contain the variola virus and, as mentioned earlier, can transmit the disease if in contact with others. Within a few weeks, most of the pustules will have scabs over it, another trademark of smallpox infection. Then, the scabs will begin to shed. It is only after all of the scabs have fallen off that the victim is no longer contagious. Smallpox was first found in the Egyptian Empire. Three mummies were found with smallpox pustules on them. From there, smallpox traveled throughout Asia, Europe, and North Africa through various established trade routes. For example, Christian crusaders played a large part in carrying the disease back home to Western Europe from their journeys in North Africa and the Middle East. However, people of the Old World soon developed immunity throughout the centuries, and thus, there were no major smallpox epidemics or pandemics at this time. But when the Europeans began to colonize North and South America, the native populations had no immunity to the disease. Thus, huge outbreaks of smallpox occurred among the various native tribes with devastating impacts. You may also be wondering why I have consistently referred to smallpox in the past tense. That is because on October 26, 1977, the last known case of smallpox was diagnosed. In 1980, the World Health Organization declared that smallpox was officially eradicated due to successful vaccination programs. This event is one of the biggest successes in public health ever. Coming up, a case study of how effective contaminated objects were at spreading smallpox. One of the most infamous events related to smallpox is the Siege of Fort Pitt. This was part of Pontiac's Rebellion, an attempt by the Native Americans to drive out the British from their territories. However, the Siege of Fort Pitt is not actually that well known for the actual siege and warfare. Many remember the siege instead as an early attempt at biological warfare. This is because at Fort Pitt, the British intentionally tried to wipe out the indigenous tribes with smallpox. In the spring of 1763, there was an outbreak of smallpox in Fort Pitt. The Fort Pitt Hospital was swarmed with smallpox victims, and the British were concerned that the disease was to ravage the rest of the Fort Pitt population. Sir Geoffrey Amherst, the leader of the fort, saw the smallpox outbreak at Fort Pitt as an opportunity to infect the neighboring Native Americans with smallpox. Amherst quotes, "We must, on this occasion, use every stratagem in our power to reduce them," end quote. There are two main theories as to how the British attempted to transmit smallpox to the Native Americans. The first one is that smallpox was intentionally spread to the Native Americans by Colonel Bouquet, an associate of Amherst. On July 13, 1763, Colonel Bouquet wrote to Amherst that he would try to spread smallpox among the Native Americans via contaminated blankets from the Fort Pitt Smallpox Infirmary. Amherst approved of Bouquet's plan, writing that not only should Bouquet transmit smallpox via contaminated blankets, but also, quote, "try every other method that can serve to extirpate this excrepable race," end quote. The second theory is that a militia captain named William Trent may have tried to spread smallpox before Bouquet in Amherst. On June 23rd that same year, Trent was noted to have met with two emissaries from the Delaware Nation. The Delaware emissaries were trying to persuade Trent and the British to leave Fort Pitt. After their request failed, the Delaware asked for provisions from the British. Thus, the British gave them liquor, as well as two blankets and a handkerchief from the smallpox ward. Despite this, historians are unclear how effective smallpox blankets were. There are records of major smallpox outbreaks among the Native Americans in the spring and summer of 1763, but it is easy for smallpox to have been transmitted to the Native Americans by other means. Thus, the effectiveness of the infamous smallpox blankets are inconclusive. Next up, the impact of smallpox in the Americas. The impact of smallpox on the indigenous peoples were extremely devastating. Not only were there many, many casualties, It was arguably the biggest reason why European colonization was so swift. From the first contact between Columbus and indigenous peoples in the 15th century to as late as the 19th and 20th centuries, deadly diseases have been continuously exchanged. As mentioned earlier in the episode, smallpox was the key contributor to the decline of the Aztec and Incan empires. Smallpox killed two Incan emperors, Huayna Capac and Huascar, which led to political turmoil in the empire. One theory is that the efficient Incan messenger system could have led to smallpox's rapid spread amongst the Incan people. Smallpox also killed off most of the Aztec army, leaving Tenochtitlan virtually defenseless. As a Spanish Franciscan friar Motolinia quotes, "As the Indians did not know the remedy of the disease, they died in heaps, like bedbugs. In many places it happened that everyone in a house died, and, as it was impossible to bury the great number of dead, they pulled down the houses over them so that their homes became their tombs," end quote. About a century later, when English settlers landed in Massachusetts in the 1600s, they brought smallpox to mainland North America. As a result of the colonists' interactions with the local tribes, many Native Americans caught smallpox, and the outbreaks devastated their populations. In the next two centuries, several smallpox epidemics occurred in the 13 colonies, with the most severe outbreak in 1721. During the American Revolutionary War, smallpox broke out again and also spread to territories in the Midwestern United States as well. Smallpox continued to be a threat in the 19th and 20th centuries until it was finally eradicated in 1980. While smallpox and other diseases were usually not intentionally spread by the European colonizers, it unfortunately is still a dark side in the tragic history of New World colonization. Thank you for listening to A History of Pandemics. Next episode, we will take a look at one of the world's biggest public health disasters, the cholera pandemics. All episodes of A History of Pandemics are available for free on Spotify or wherever else you listen to podcasts. You can stream the podcast on your computer, phone, tablet, or any other electronic device wherever you are. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to follow the podcast on Spotify. See you next time.